Welcome to MacGuffin. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James. Before we get started, I want to get you to check out our website, MacGuffinMen.com. We've put out a lot of good content recently. We talked about Point Break a couple weeks ago, Apocalypse Now, and earlier this week we talked about Carrie. So check out our website, TheMacGuffinMen.com. Follow us on Twitter, at TheMacGuffinMen, and stay tuned for the rest of this episode. Yeah.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Yes. I hope everyone stayed tuned.
I feel like if they started this podcast, they made it 20 seconds into this podcast.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What? Okay, anyway. what are we talking about today?
Fortunately... we are talking about Varsity Blues.
Yes.
In order to celebrate the beginning of the NFL season.
And the beginning of high school again.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Talked about Carrie on Tuesday. Talking about Varsity Blues on Thursday.
This has basically been my whole high school experience in like a week.
I will ask for no further details.
Believe it or not, we've been trying to get around to Varsity Blues for a long time.
You've been trying a lot harder than me.
And in my defense of that, unfortunately, true statement, I had not seen this movie until this week, so.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it until last month, or 2 months ago, I suppose. I watched it on Independence Day in America while drinking Budweiser, which I feel like is the only proper way to watch Varsity Blues.
I also would have accepted Lone Star.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we weren't in Texas, so I feel like it would have just been hard to obtain.
True. Yeah. And how'd you like it?
This movie's fucking bananas. I should also mention there were a number of Budweisers consumed before the beginning of this movie, which is the only way this movie should be consumed, because this movie is not entertaining if you are a thinking sober person.
I'd say it's entertaining
ish. It's a slog, man. When I was watching it again and taking notes, it was a long 104 minutes.
There's just, like, I just have a couple notes where this movie is bad, or this scene is terrible, or Ali Larter does not deserve a career.
Well, I mean, does she have a career?
Yeah. No, she doesn't. The universe figured it out eventually.
Five Final Destination movies, and they finally pieced it together.
Well, my question is, what went wrong? Like, we have I mean, it's 1999.
Yeah.
We've got director Brian Robbins at the peak of his game.
Coming fresh off that Good Burger heat.
Yeah, this is post-Good Burger. Post Ready to Rumble.
No, this is pre-Ready to Rumble, isn't it?
Okay, yeah.
I think this is right before Ready to Rumble. I'm going to say one nice thing about Brian Robbins before we continue to talk about Brian Robbins. He directed a hip-hop documentary called The Show from like 1994 that's actually, I mean, it's kind of sloppy, but has some really, really high points and is totally worth watching. But after that, his career is basically worthless.
Well, yeah, as the director of a movie that has 0% on Rotten Tomatoes currently.
Which one's, is that one of the Eddie Murphy ones?
Yeah, 1,000 Words.
Okay.
Yeah, not this movie. This movie, obviously, way better than 0%.
Yeah. What is it, like a hard 20?
So it was, I don't know what movie I wanted to do a podcast about. Mm-hmm. That decision was made before seeing it. But I mean, it's a high school movie, Texas football, the 90s. I knew I was in for a treat.
Yeah.
And so I put this movie on. I see there's someone in the cast named Richard Lineback, which was very entertaining to me.
Yeah.
And the first two words of dialogue in this movie are "in America" after superimposing the colors of the American flag over the title of this movie. Yeah.
Isn't it the Texas flag?
Oh, it is similar. Yeah. It's the same colors, but I guess it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's even better.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's better.
Oh, 100% that's better. 100% the opposite of 1,000 words Rotten Tomatoes score. That's better.
Yeah, this movie's, it's bonkers. I mean, you sent me a text at some point when you were presumably when you were watching this movie, that said this movie is insane. And I want to know at which point you sent me that text message. Because I have a strong feeling it was very close to the beginning.
Yeah, I can't recall when, but, I mean, we get that dialogue right away.
Yeah.
We get his little brother on a crucifix pretty quickly. Which I didn't understand, which I think was the first indication that there's just so much in this movie I'm never going to get, you know?
Yeah.
No, actually, it may have been the billboard on Paul Walker's lawn.
That, oh, really?
Is when I said this movie's insane.
That's funny.
Isn't that not insane? Is that a common thing?
That's a thing. That's a Texas high school thing. I don't know if they're normally that big and have pictures, but there are signs on high school football players' lawns.
You know this from Friday Night Lights or from
and from further Friday Night Lights research.
That's craziness to me.
Yeah. Oh, Texas. The more you read about Texas high school football, the less you understand about reality. Like, as a general rule, as somebody that has read a lot about Texas high school football, the world makes much less sense than it used to.
I honestly didn't even know Paul Walker is in this movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's a great intro for somebody that was unaware of his presence.
It's so many things. I was so happy that he was in this. But yeah, his little musical entrance and everything about when he shows up in this movie.
The low angle, slow motion shot of him walking out of his front door wearing his jersey.
Oh, God. It was just perfect. And just try to imagine not knowing Paul Walker was going to be in this and then having that happen.
Yeah, exactly. This is probably the first notable movie that he's in, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
He looks the part, though. Like it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. He can't even mention his bed in front of women without them cheering.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I thought his whole part at the pep rally was great.
Yeah, about him having a dream.
Yeah, that was so funny.
Oh, just all the ladies screaming woo like two people kissed in Boy Meets World or something. it made me so happy.
Yeah. It was pretty great.
And I didn't know Scott Conn was in this either.
Yeah, you love Scott Conn.
I love him in this, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What, you don't?
Oh, no. Scott, I mean, he has some problematic views on how one should treat women. But other than that, Tweeter's a gem.
And what do you mean about treating women?
Let's just say when CeeLo made those tweets about rape this past weekend, Scott Conn's character in Varsity Blues was cheering, yes, finally somebody says what's on my mind.
Those got retweeted right away
from Scott Conn. Exactly. From the jail cell that Tweeter is currently occupying. Got retweeted with the quickness.
Yeah, well, he literally does say in this movie, I'm gonna go to jail.
And that's so funny. When he steals the cop car and then the ADR, the I'm gonna go to jail line. So funny.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's better than the she looks like she fell out of the I want to suck your dick tree and hit every branch on the way down.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, yeah, let's round out the football crew here. We got Billy Bob.
Yep. Just chugging syrup. That's the moment of this movie where he first drink, like, when he's fucking putting the pancake in the peanut butter or whatever it is that he's rubbing peanut butter on straight from the jar while driving his pickup truck. I was like, okay, fine. And then he, like, chugs maple syrup and makes a face that signifies like he's not enjoying it. And I think that was the moment where I was watching this with our mutual friend Emily, where we were kind of like, what the fuck is happening in this movie?
Yeah, I guess that's just him, you know, that's what he's putting his body through for the team, man.
Yeah, I guess.
He doesn't even enjoy drinking straight syrup, but he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Billy Bob.
No more to talk about Billy Bob. And
he's fat. He has magic cat scans that cure his brain.
Yeah, that one kind of threw me for a loop. He has his first name on his jersey.
Yep.
He talks to dinosaurs when he drinks. And then who else? We got...
We haven't talked about Mox.
We'll get to Mox.
Okay.
There's plenty of Mox to go around.
Yeah.
And Wendell Brown.
Yes. For those who don't recognize the name Wendell Brown, he's the black guy. And this movie barely recognizes Wendell Brown.
It recognizes his color long enough for
yeah.
Mox to stop racism in Texas forever.
Exactly. No, this is what. Also, thank you for saying Texas forever. But
it's really accidental.
The one thing that the one thing of note that he says in this movie is how racist Coach Kilmer is, and then. By prove it, like me having to remember, oh, this guy has been introduced earlier in this movie. Like it proves the movie doesn't focus on any minorities at all. You know, like he's just like Coach Kilmer's racist. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, wait, this movie hasn't dealt with a single minority yet, despite there being, you know, Wendell and players named Pena and Hernandez on the team.
Yeah, and, yeah. You know, we can assume more than one black person in this town as well.
But yeah, exactly.
That's never shown.
Yeah.
It's so refreshing to have a character whose only function is to point out racism and then just make him a token character who does nothing else other than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a great little bit. And then there's Kilmer. Yeah. I understand not a player, but he's fun.
Oh, he's great. I love John Voight in this movie. I don't think he's bad. Like, if this was a good movie, I don't think his performance would be bad. And for a bad movie, it's a great performance. Like, I think he is so magnetic in this movie. He gets me through this movie, basically, at a lot of points. We talked about Paul Walker's speech at the pep rally at the beginning of the movie. Coach Kilmer's bit at the beginning destroys me. How there's obviously a microphone there that he will just not be using today, thank you very much. He just raises his hand and everyone shuts the hell up because Coach Kilmer is God here, you know, and we listen when he talks.
Oh, quite clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is John Voight is good in this. Kind of the big emotional scene, I guess, between kind of the confrontation between he and Mox.
Yeah.
Is just a terrible scene, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's hideous. And again, it's not because of his performance, as you said, but I don't know, something about that. And again, it's not like this movie kind of, you know, really had me roped in and then this one little scene dropped the ball. But even that one seemed like glaringly bad in an already not very good movie.
Yeah, this movie is not well written, and I feel like that's probably the standout of its not well writtenness.
Yeah, I even thought visually it looked ugly too. Like, just, I don't know, the blocking, everything just was unappealing about it.
Yeah, you're talking about the scene with the reverse Sprewell, if you will.
The reverse Sprewell?
Yeah, where he chokes out Mox, the coach chokes Mox.
Yeah, exactly.
The timing is about right for that reference, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's an old reference, but it still holds up.
Very, very relevant at the time of the making of this movie.
I agree. And I mean, there's a lot of questionable things in the writing of this film, but that was especially poor. But like, if you're doing secret painkiller injections, maybe close the door that's just out of the training room that you're trying to hide everybody from this, you know?
Yeah, that was a great moment.
Yeah, close the door, close up on the word courage.
Oh god.
Woof.
Yeah, that's no good. Although it was a very, very nice Godfather reference, which I assume was the goal there.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
What about the beer can challenge scene?
Oh, is where they're throwing footballs at people's heads that have beer cans on them?
To knock empty cans alone, stare off your dad's head.
I thought it was weird. like large portions of this movie, it was simultaneously entertaining, annoying, and confusing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got some more kind of crazy visuals there, some more low angle and like skewed shots.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what was with super drunk mom in that scene? That was like the weirdest part of that whole scene to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Once again, this movie. Some large problems. Yeah. Large problems and large martinis.
Oh,
or,
God.
Margaritas, I guess it probably was.
Very large.
Yeah.
Did you anticipate more of a beef between Lance and Mox ever materializing, or is Mox just too good?
I don't think so, because Mox never aspires for the job. Lance, it never seems to be a competition in either of their minds. And, Lance just seems like a pretty decent guy from what we get to see of him. And there's really not a lot of Lance in the movie. I don't know. I guess I didn't put a lot of thinking into this movie before I watched it or while I was watching it. But, I didn't really expect more. And Lance just kind of disappears from this movie for like 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. And then gets the Gatorade splash. And then
he deserved it.
Yeah, 100%.
He's the hottest one on the team. He deserves it.
He sure is. I guess maybe just kind of when Lance's girlfriend gets involved and tries to seduce Mox, I thought maybe we'd get more of a confrontation. But no, you're right. We kind of have two just awesome dudes, you know. Yeah. Like there's always at least one total douche quarterback on the team in movies and TV, right?
Yeah.
And Lance is just like a good-looking macho guy, but with none of the bad characteristics that typically come with that. And Mox is very intelligent, sensitive.
He reads Vonnegut, so you know he's smart.
It is kind of an interesting character, but just the rest of this movie around it makes it just a total waste.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that, exactly. There are interesting ideas that are executed extremely poorly, and huge jumps in tone in the movie that totally undermine anything interesting this movie actually does. Yeah.
What do you mean for a jump in tone?
I'm trying to think of an example, but I don't know. Whatever horrible head injury Billy Bob has, and then jumping to some goofy comedy of him drunk at a party and vomiting in a washing machine.
Yeah. 100%. I could think of a few. I just wanted to know what you had in mind.
Oh, they're constant. I just can't think of any of the juxtapositions right now, I suppose. But I feel like we go from Billy Bob's semi-attempted suicide directly to a comedy bit after that scene, but I can't remember for sure.
Yeah, we just have kind of fairly isolated scenes, like the teacher being a stripper or the sex ed class.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the Van Halen video in the middle of this film.
God, that song is so terrible.
You could say that about so many of the songs in this film.
You know they paid $500,000 to use Thunderstruck in this?
No, but I strongly suspect they only wanted this song or that song for this movie because the word Texas is in it.
Yeah, twice at least.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a pretty rocking song, but
yeah, okay. It's not like you couldn't have found a cheaper version that rocks equally as hard.
No, but
I mean, you used Hero twice, why not use it three times?
Oh, God. Another just terrible song. do you, other than John Voight, any parts of this movie you like? Or none?
I really enjoy how Mox and Jules, how their characters are the two characters that are, maybe in love or dating or whatever. and they have the far and away the worst dye jobs in the movie. I think that's some good coupling. There are a lot of funny pants in this film.
You're not going to give this movie anything.
What does it deserve?
I think it's...
I do, in general, I find Amy Smart charming. I don't know why. I've just always enjoyed her. That's something. And Dawson Leary's accent in this film is great.
Yeah, I thought you might like their... just the relationship between Jules and Mox a lot. Like, it's kind of... I think most of their scenes together are all right. And I think probably the best scene in this movie... is when he goes to kind of confront her while she's at work.
Yeah.
And I know the best scene in this movie is still not a very good scene.
Yeah.
But I thought that was good, like kind of using his own fame against him and getting the whole crowd over to him. I don't know. I think that could have been handled even more poorly, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
But... like, I thought their relationship was kind of cool. I think she's good in this. Like, as good as anyone is in this, I guess.
Yeah.
But that was one part I liked. I liked their relationship, and it's because, you know, as I said before, Mox isn't kind of the normal quarterback or character at all you see in football movies. Yeah. So they kind of had this is kind of the one moment where they did anything with that.
Yeah.
But then they have, I don't know. Then they just go way over the top and hit it right on the head. And she says, look at John Moxon having a gut check minute about who he really is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, guys, come on.
And that's
like it refuses to be good for more than like 15 seconds at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when Kilmer's talking a couple moments and then you just have to do something so bad, like the blinds on her restaurant reflecting on his windshield to look like prison bars. And I don't know. There are just small bits of a good movie in here, and then just covered with absolute garbage.
Yeah. I suppose this is my the best place to enter for ever any for me to do my Friday Night Lights interjection, which will last a minute. I guarantee it.
No, please. I really want. I feel like that's necessary because I was thinking of this in kind of the the timeline of where this falls for Friday Night Lights movie and TV show, and the fact that Jesse Plemons is in this.
That is not the only thing this movie shares with Friday Night Lights.
Okay, go for it. And don't feel like it needs to be contained to a minute.
Okay.
Got a lot of time to
fill. So the assistant coach in this movie, not John Voight, John Voight's assistant, is played by a guy named Tim Crowley, who plays Coach Crowley in the Friday Night Lights TV series. There's a strip club called the Landing Strip in the Friday Night Lights TV series. There's Landry. There's backup QB that, because of injury, becomes the starting QB. He's kind of he would read Vonnegut. He's that type of character. He dates somebody named Jules. The announcer, the main announcer in Varsity Blues, plays a booster in Friday Night Lights. I think this. And I'm that was all TV show that I was talking about. This movie, Varsity Blues, I think is very, very loosely based on Buzz Bissinger's Friday Night Lights book, which came out in 1988 or somewhere around there. I think this movie is definitely based on that book. So there are a lot of parallels to be drawn there. And then because Friday Night Lights was even more loosely based on that book, you can draw the same parallels. Yeah
and obviously like small town in West Texas.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that makes Varsity Blues even more frustrating is that it's about all of the same things that Friday Night Lights the TV show is about, with the exception of how they treat the coach. But the TV show does everything well, as opposed to doing everything extremely poorly, you know. Like, all of those moments that you like in this movie are expanded on and developed in the Friday Night Lights television show.
Yeah. And not surrounded with shit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What about, is there a lot of this kind of parental rivalry in Friday Night Lights?
It depends on the parents, but like, no, not really. There's not, I don't think there's a lot of competing for positions going on in the TV show, with the exception of, I guess, Smash and Riggins towards the beginning. Riggins doesn't really have a dad.
Okay. Because I mean, for me, this movie you know, I guess the to use the term lightly, legacy of this movie to me is the whipped cream bikini and a bit of dialogue that involves the words "I don't want your life."
Yes, exactly. That's not how they're pronounced, but those are the words that are ostensibly being said.
No, those are kind of the two, you know, famous, as iconic as anything in this movie gets, kind of moments.
And again,
the whipped cream bikini thing, nothing really develops of their scene. Like, we just kind of get...
Ellie Larder's character in this movie is a fucking joke. She's the worst.
Yeah, and, you know,
the fact, like, the second Lance gets injured, she's just like, "Hey, you're the starting quarterback now. Let's fuck." You know, like, it was crazy. I hated it. I did not like the writing of her character at all.
No, it's awful. And then he calls her out on it, and she just breaks down and says, "This is my only way out of this town," and then just is gone from this movie, pretty much.
Yeah. Exactly. For the other Friday Night Lights fans, Tyra. But again, this is a character done way better in the TV show. You know, like, we get only the loosest basings of this type of thing in Varsity Blues, and then Friday Night Lights, they kind of turn an unlikable character into somebody really interesting. So.
Right. And I Don't Want Your Life, I think that kind of made me think a lot of this movie was going to be kind of him and his dad fighting about him not taking it seriously. But...
yeah,
like, it's just all the things, like, it's just Kilmer that's pretty much the bad guy. I mean, we do see, obviously, some tense scenes between Mox and his father, but it's mostly him versus Kilmer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, when he does that "I don't want your life" speech, I was like, or line, I guess, I was thinking, like, do they dislike each other? Like, I know he throws the football and hits him in the head at the beginning, but I don't think it's set up at all that... Mox's dad is a shithead or anything. I think it's just, and I don't think that speech needs to be "I hate you, dad." Like, I don't think that's necessarily the meaning. I think it just means "I don't want your life, dad," you know. But yeah, I don't even know if Mox really hates his dad or if he just hates Bud Kilmer.
I would go with the second one. It just seems like his dad's still a little bit under his Kilmer's spell, which bugs Mox. But
yeah, exactly.
That's it. And so we kind of mentioned it in passing. What do we make of little Mox? Mox's little spiritual brother who does not seem to be understood by anybody.
My take on it is the idea, and we get a lot of attempts at pairing football with religion in this film. The way John Voight is treated like a god, the way he addresses his congregation at the beginning. And I think the idea of the kid is that it's supposed to be that Texas's religion is football. And it's this thing that brings all of these disparate types of people together with the same kind of joy. And that's what I think Mox's speech at the end is supposed to mean. It's like, you know, we all did these different things, but on this one day we were one, type of thing. And it's supposed to be the brother is just, I don't know. Like, people on the outside of this line of thinking look at it like it's crazy, like how we look at Texas high school football, because we are not a part of it. We don't understand it. And I think that's what the brother is supposed to symbolize. He's supposed to be the way we see this movie, and everybody in this movie, with the exception of the little brother, looks at him like he's crazy just because he's got his own little, I don't know, adventurous religious world going on in his head.
Yeah, his spirituality.
Yeah, exactly.
And finding its forms in many ways throughout the movie.
Yeah.
But we don't see Mox side that kind of thing. And at the same time, so much of this movie is about getting out from under that. Like, I feel Kilmer is your big representative of, you know, football as religion and living life only to play football. But most of the struggle, which entirely the whole team is successful with getting through, is to value things other than football. No?
Yes. In my little speech there about his brother, I gave this movie way more credit than I feel like it deserves.
Okay.
So it's not like this is a point I will argue very, very hard. You know?
Okay.
That's just me trying to give this movie anything.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Because yes, I agree with you in that there are conflicting messages going on.
Okay, that's fair. That's what I was trying to get at. near the end, though, Mox, you know, he has his little speech there, and Jules goes to kiss him, and he says, "I thought you only kissed heroes."
Yeah.
What if could they have lost this game in this movie, and it's been kind of more to the point?
I have another question for you. What game do they win?
I think division champions.
Okay. Because I never really found it particularly clear at what point in the season it was.
Absolutely not. It's not very clear at all.
Okay. And they must lose a game at some point, right?
They lose the hangover game.
Yeah, okay.
Which is another thing I just didn't understand, but continue.
What, that they would lose while hungover?
No, why he was like kind of sabotaging the team, but then played, and I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like it was a way to get back at Kilmer, I guess, but yeah. I don't know.
He doesn't want his life, right? Yeah, because I was confused with the statement towards the end. He says, "I never played football again," in his voiceover. And I was like, well, I guess they didn't play state because that game could, like, they didn't play in the state championship because that couldn't have been big enough for, you know, they're playing on their home field at the end. So, yeah, it must have been some just their last game of the year and they had no chance of making state because they lost, I guess. But anyway, good sports movies end on a loss. I think that's a pretty good way of drawing the line. The good Rockies end with Rocky losing. The bad Rockies end with him winning in a hilarious fashion. Sometimes defeating communism. So I think that's a pretty good line to draw. And this just isn't a really good sports movie. You never see a good sports movie where the team wins the championship. Like, you look at the ending of Any Given Sunday, they win the last game that we see, but it's like the wild card playoff game, and they lose to San Francisco the next week, you know?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Just maybe this is me wanting this movie to be better, but that seemed like definitely a really interesting way to take to go. And I mean, I thought in a bunch of ways, Mox is an interesting character, and you know, so much of this movie is about how things are more important than football, but being kind of a teen MTV movie, this inevitably had to end with them winning the big game, or at least the biggest game that we see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think,
like, yes. He wants to go to Brown and read Slaughterhouse-Five instead of the playbook.
He's the football-playing version of Ethan Embry from Can't Hardly Wait.
He's
going to his writer class taught by Kurt Vonnegut in the summer.
Yeah, 100%. It seemed like his choice of Jules over fucking Ali Larter. And, you know, like sabotaging the team with the hangover game. It just seemed like this movie was going to do something different sometimes.
Yeah.
And never, ever did.
Well, and I mean... Sorry.
No, and just to get more into kind of Mox and James Vanderbeek, you know, and him being, you know, a very big deal when this movie came out. And obviously being the most famous for playing Dawson in Dawson's Creek. He plays like a smart, sensitive, you know, sarcastic, not super macho guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think everything about kind of the... James Vanderbeek character in pop culture, and so much about this movie and so much about Mox sets up that he's more than just being a kind of a winning quarterback and does something a bit more noble. And yeah, he, you know, defeated racism and saved Billy Bob's life. Yeah. And I don't know. I guess he didn't quite save Tweeter. that one got away from him.
Can't win them all.
But I guess all we have kind of for that storyline is him saying, "I never played football again," right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the thing that further hurts the characterization of Mox is that they kind of split the difference between him being the sensitive, smart kid and him being the total renegade. You know, like... the talented renegade type of thing. Because that's the thing, like, he has everything. He's good at sports, and he's smart, you know, like, and he has, and he's the rebel. He's like all three hero archetypes in a football movie combined.
Yeah,
and that's why it's not interesting. It's because he doesn't lack anything.
Well, and he's nice to everybody, and you know, everyone seems to like him. He seems to like everybody.
Exactly. Like, he's better than Lance because he has the other interesting things too. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I guess I just need you to be the resident James Van Der Beek expert here, as someone who has seen way more Dawson's Creek than I ever will.
I assume so. I need to have a stern talking to you about your life choices if you are unsure of whether or not you're going to watch more Dawson's Creek than you already have.
I guess what's the James Van Der Beek appeal? And how does it play into this movie? And when I ask this question, I think he's fine in this movie for, you know, the most part and what he has to work with. And kind of everything I've seen about him in real life makes me think he's a pretty funny, self-deprecating dude, which, you know, goes a long way in my books.
Yeah.
Kind of what's the appeal and how does that fit into to Mox and Varsity Blues altogether?
Well, the appeal, first of all, James Van Der Beek gets cast in this movie exclusively because of the success of Dawson's Creek, which in its early days was a runaway success. And he's just cast in Dawson's Creek for some reason. I think he's fine. He's fine as Dawson. He's fine at playing like a little wimp who's like... good looking enough, doesn't hate the ending, or you know, the saccharine bullshit of E.T. And yeah, I don't know, it's just, it all goes, his whole career just goes back to being cast as Dawson Leary. It's not like he added anything that I don't think could have been replaced by, you know, any other actor of his stature. I'm sure there are 10 other people that could have been playing Dawson Leary and are now making beer appear from the bottom or from under the counter of a convenience store for like an 18-year-old football player in Texas now, you know, like it's just luck of him getting cast as Dawson, and that's the reason he's in Varsity Blues. He's not in Varsity Blues because some casting director was like, I think this Van Der Beek kid's got what we need. Well, they are saying, I think this Van Der Beek kid's got what we need, but he means it in that he'll bring in the 18-year-old girls or 14 to 18-year-old girls, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Not anything about who he is. Just
yeah, exactly.
Where he is in his career.
Exactly. He was on the cover of J14 at the time, you know? So that's the type of person that they need to cast in the lead of this movie. And then, you know, the other quarterback needs to be cast as somebody who could be on the cover of J14, you know?
Yeah. And they got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I guess I know people, girls are around the time were attracted to him. I just don't think he's an insanely good looking guy to be the star of such a incredibly popular teen television show.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like Dawson's Creek was created as a juggernaut that was expected to set the world on fire. I think it's premiered in the winter. It was on the WB. It was just one of those things that was just a sensation, a cultural sensation. And he just got lucky. And I think he knows that. I think he's well aware of that. He was in I guess the casting director saw the right thing in him in the right time. You know?
Yeah. And then,
and he's fine as Dawson, but he's so fucking annoying in that show. But that's, again, mostly a writing thing. But he's good in comedies. Like the limited amount of The Bitch in Apartment 23 that I've seen, he's funny. When he was on How I Met Your Mother, I think he was probably on 5 episodes or so over the course of 9 years. He was funny. And, like, really playing, like, a good comedic character in both of those. And I don't know. He's fun.
It's kind of the rest of his career that really fascinates me. Because I, again, just being the star of, like, teen, I guess, rom-com television series. I just expect kind of a classically good-looking guy that doesn't really offer much else, right?
Well, that was the Pacey role. In Dawson's Creek, that was the Pacey role.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And that, I mean, but if you kind of look at all these teen dramas, there's always the emotional kid. It's just normally, I don't know, like, I think Dawson's Creek is just the one we have more experience with. I never watched Party of Five. I assume there's the emotional brother, and then Scott Wolf is the hot brother. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've been looking at his career kind of since then, and he just him in pop culture. He seems to be having so much fun with it, and is in this really weird space. Like,
it's because every time he gets a job, he's like, "I don't deserve this job." I really think that's how he thinks. I think he's self-aware enough to know exactly like what I've been saying is that, you know, he was in the right place. He was a part of a cultural sensation. You know, he's got that whole Ringo Starr thing. He was just a part of one thing that will allow him to continue to exist in our minds, you know?
Well, if that's what it takes for him to be having a laser battle with Kesha in a music video.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, him just, his website and all the memes he plays into and him playing himself in Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just this self-deprecating nature. It's like, yeah, I'm here. I guess you know who I am. I may not deserve to be here, but let's have some fun with this and make some money. And
what? Sorry.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Did he just get cast in like a new CSI show as well? Is that a thing that I'm making up?
CSI Cyber.
Yeah, that. Is that for real?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Because that seems like something I might have made up. Like that day when we were talking to each other and we're like, did Kevin Love get traded or did I dream it? Yeah. But yeah, and somebody else is really weird as cast in that show too. I guess to get the cyber crowd, you have to cast. you have to think outside the box. Get the kids.
Who has a good Tumblr? Get Vanderbeek.
Oh, Bow Wow. Bow Wow's the other guy I was thinking of.
All right, well, tune in next week for our CSI Cybercast.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Man. Yeah, check out our CSI Cybercast next week.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.